Under Armour, Scott. Under Armour.
Under Armour just got through with their inaugural Mountain Running Series race out in at Bachelor Mountain just this last weekend. And we heard through our contacts at Under Armour that Cody Reed won the 50K in a tie with a guy named Mario Mendoza. And that was for the 50K. And our own Yu Wang,
yes,
she actually took the half marathon distance. She was kind of doing a recovery run, I think, and she still won that.
How nice to do a recovery run and stand on a podium.
I saw some photos, and it was not just a mountain running competition. It looked like a festival for ultra running.
And we described that on this podcast coming up, a trail gathering.
It is. And if you missed that race at Bachelor, we actually have some two other locations that are coming up, one in Killington and one in Copper Mountain. If you go to our partners page, you will see a banner there for Under Armour Mountain Running. You can click on that and you can see and register for those races. And if you enter the code TRNATION, you can get a 20% off discount on your registration.
Killington, when give us some dates, Scott. You gave us locations. I need some dates so I can see if my calendar's free.
Coming up in Killington is on August 18th through the 20th. And you're saying, wait a minute, why is it so many days? It's because they have a race distance for everyone from 5K, 10K. There's a vertical challenge. There's a marathon relay. So if you have a bunch of friends you want to run a marathon with, there's a half marathon, a full marathon, and a 50K.
Ooh.
So that's why it's spread over so many days. Killington, Vermont on August 18th through the 20th, and back in the Rocky Mountains at Copper Mountain, Colorado on September 8th through the 10th.
Scott, do you think there might be somebody that runs more than just one of the races?
Ooh.
I'd like to throw that challenge out there.
Register for like three of them?
It's possible.
One every day?
I do understand, though, you get bonus points for wearing their new trail shoes.
They do have some pretty cool trail running shoes. If you go to underarmor.com, you can take a look at those new ones.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls of the worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast with me, a complete imposter here in London, England, and your two real hosts over there with a skeleton behind them very early morning in the studio. It's Scott and Dom.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah.
There's a bunch of, like, old brothel hookers, like, buried out here.
But I know it's on the upper edge, and you guys have won a couple of awards. And
I've never prepped for a podcast ever.
Oh, that's what you're doing.
Okay, we'll clear that up. That will, the Group of the Nation and podcast downloaders are very sophisticated.
They are.
They're unlike any other group out there. They're tolerant. They ignore our many imperfections, and they'll be able to substitute the word, no problem.
They will.
All right. Are we ready?
Yeah. Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. I'm Don Freeman.
I'm Scott Warr, and we have our East Coast executive producer, Andy Jones-Wilkins, with us today. Hey, Andy.
It's going very, very good. We'd also like to welcome Brian Contosh. Also, from here on out, we'll be called Tosh. I met Brian on a little run called the Tahoe 200.
Are you sure you met him, or was this a hallucination?
Tosh, there was a few hallucinations out there, and perhaps we can break into some of that. But the topic today is tribe.
Ooh.
And it's based on Sebastian Younger's book, Tribe. And if you like any part of this conversation, I recommend highly.
It's a great book.
You go out and read it, listen to it, bookmark it, and just
reference it.
It's a good, good book. And part of what made me think about Tosh was that instantly in this little 200-mile run that we did, and we didn't know each other before. We met maybe at mile 24 or something, but became fast friends and tribe mates and members of the same tribe through this 205 miles that we ran. And a relationship that started there and just, it somehow had this strange kind of bond or binding that you have with people that do hard things.
And I was going to say, when we brought up this whole idea about this book called Tribe, what's the full title, Don?
Well, that's a nice way to throw it at me. I don't know. What's the full title, Andy Jones Wilkins?
You have the book in front of you. On
it's on homecoming and belonging, tribe on homecoming.
So when Don reached out to Tosh and said, "Hey, we're thinking about doing this podcast on this book, Tribe on Homecoming and Belonging," Tosh said, "Oh yeah, it's on my coffee table. I've read it." So we knew that he was qualified.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess that's how we just start this thing off. A great book, great concepts, and we've each picked some quotes out, and we want to talk about how our community, trail running, is a tribe amongst our group and why it's important.
You know, where I would start off is we've discussed this on the podcast before, where as a society, we live in a pretty cush environment. You know, we don't have a lot of physical or mental challenges. There's stresses in our lives, but you know, if you have a headache, you take a pill and the headache goes away. If you have depression, you can take a pill and it will alter your mood and control that. There's not a lot of really hard things that we have to deal with. And ancient man had that, and mm-hmm. they were able to endure that. And I think that's where tribe comes in. You know, as an individual, you may have hardships that come to yourself in isolation, which is really, really difficult to deal with. But if you have a tribe, those hardships are easier to endure and overcome.
Communities basically were formed with 50 to 150 people, and we worked well together as that size. AJW, what are your thoughts on that as tribes, as groups of people, as they're small and they expand? Do you have any immediate thoughts about that?
Absolutely. And I think it really applies as well to my line of work in education. We find that working with smaller groups of people, whether they be in a classroom, in a lab, on a sports team, on a community service project, you know, having that small, nimble group where everybody is known and everybody is understood, you know, creates something tribal. I also feel as though kids and adults all feel sort of a primal need to belong to something greater than themselves. And I think there's a part of our modern society that leads to more isolation, more alienation. And as a result, that feeling of belonging, there's a hunger for that feeling of belonging.
Well, you know, we invited Tosh because he's been a member of some very elite tribes, a retired major from the United States Marine Corps. He's an international adventure racer. He's a CrossFit athlete, and he's an endurance runner. He knows something about communities and tribe and building teams. He also has a business where he builds and fosters leadership and gets high performance out of teams that are already in existence. So not only did we become fast friends out on a trail, but he's uniquely qualified in his experiences in life to add to this conversation. What types of advantages and experiences do you see with tribe, Tosh?
Well, I'd like to just kind of go back to a quick comment that we talk about population and increased numbers, or is it population density? Does it create insulation or isolation, or does it actually create a sense of anonymity? And that anonymity is what starts to foster individuals' darker things that takes the mean spirit of competition, or I can get one over on my teammate, or I can not perform as highly as I should because I'll ride the waves of others. So to me, it's almost like this increased population is what detracts from individuals being individuals and being celebrated for who they are. This sense of belonging to me in these groups, these teams that I've been a part of, it's intimately related with, hey, I'm appreciated and respected for the skills or the talents or the personality or the individualism that I bring to the table to solve problems, to contribute to the greater good of the whole. And so when I've read this book now for the third time, actually, it really strikes with me that there's a part of it there with all of these tribes. People feel a sense of value because they're not anonymous. They're not lost in this crowd. So whether it's on the trail, whether it's serving overseas, whether it's in training even, fostering this sense of connectivity between individuals that's built on mutual respect, I think that's paramount. And that to me is what's so attractive. It's intoxicating. Why I gravitated to you, I assume that you were serving up some lonesome miles just as I was, and we were contemplating things in our heads. Oh, why are we doing this? And my feet hurt, and wow, I've still got 100 miles to go. And you latch on to somebody else and you make a connection with them, and all of a sudden, it's not so scary. It's not so daunting being out there in the world, because I've got somebody that I can lean on, or that I can provide strength that individual can lean on me. And to me, that's the essence of a tribe, a close-knit unit.
So Tosh, you and Don participated in this Tahoe 200-mile run. How did you guys, or what caused you guys to connect and become, for lack of a better word, a part of a tribe? What was it that connected you versus maybe you guys seeing each other in a grocery store? What was it that connected you guys?
And I'll jump in there, Tosh. You know, and AJW, I think back to your recent 100 in the mud and the severe weather conditions and the tribe that you formed as you ran through with your guys. And so I'd like to hear a little bit about that and how it relates. But I think with Tosh and I, it was, we knew that we had a big, big miles ahead of us. And we knew that you need to find somebody that you could trust and rely on, that there may be some controversy or obstacles that come in front of you that there's just no way as one person you could handle it. And somehow, just through some discussion, I think that we had similar values and thoughts and aligned ourselves with one another. So I think that's it.
Did it happen naturally or organically? Or did you guys say, hey, we got to stick together here?
No, I would say it was organically. And it definitely happened when I was sleeping alongside the trail at night. And he came by and said, hey, get up. Let's go. Latch on to me and just stay with me. We got 9 miles to the aid stations and just keep on going. And those 9 miles went pretty nice. You remember that, Tosh? Or was I hallucinating then?
No, I absolutely do. We were running along a long stretch. And I don't go on these adventure races to seek accolades or anything. I go for an experience, and I go because I love the community. And, you know, for some of the things that we'll obviously delve into here, and again, it is intoxicating, but, you know, when you come up alongside somebody and they're just laying down on the trail, it's not the human thing to do, to just not say, hey, dude, are you all right? And came across Don, and he's lying on the side of the trail, and he's like, hey, man, how you doing? You all right? And he's like, yeah, I'm just taking a break. He's like, well, why don't you get up and just come with me, and we'll work this out together. I don't know if it's a function of my military training background or if it's who I am, but it just makes sense not to leave somebody there. And, you know, to Don's credit, he was like, you know what? Why not? Let's do it. He jumped right up. We just started walking, trotting along, and we started to form a bond, and that bond, I think, proved mutually beneficial, serving through the next, I don't know, how many more miles did we do together? 60, 70 more miles?
You know, that's the great thing about the tribe is that it grew in size, and at times there were maybe 4 or 5 or 6 of us that exchanged places along the way, and we all knew where one another was during that time. So the tribe was more than two. There was a group of us, and that's what you've experienced, AJW, as part of community and tribe and your recent hardship at your 100.
Yeah, you know, I think that there's something about the shared suffering or shared adversity, the shared challenge that brings oftentimes, you know, unfamiliar people together in ways that the relationship ends up having a much deeper meaning over time than to use Gotti's example, than just running across someone in the grocery store, you know. And I found my Bighorn experience, for example, was just one of sheer, you know, comfort in finding, you know, a couple people here and a couple people there. To get through the night and get through the mud and get through various ailments and injuries. And I think there's something about long distance running, long distance adventuring that brings that out in ways that maybe other things in life don't necessarily do. I mean, certainly, you know, high level sports teams and military battalions and dance troops and theater organizations. I mean, any sort of group that's united against or for something is going to find that bond. But what I love about the long distance running events is you don't really plan for it to happen. And so when it does happen, it's that much more meaningful.
To Tosh's point earlier, he had mentioned that you have to feel included. You have to have an important role to be a member of your tribe. And if the group grows too big, that you lose some of those positions, that you're no longer really needed, that your contributions have already been filled by someone else. And one of Sebastian Younger's quote right from the book, it says, "It may be worth considering whether middle-class American life, for all its material good fortune, has lost some essential sense of unity that might otherwise discourage alienated men and turning apocalyptically violent." So, you know, there's some mental stresses that occur when people don't feel they can contribute, that they're not needed, and all of a sudden their energy goes somewhere that's not good. It goes to maybe starting their own tribe or doing something different that isn't good. Yeah, Tosh.
You know, I love that. And, you know, let's quote a phrase. I'll paraphrase it. I'll ruin it. But idle hands left to their devices will do the devil's
right.
work, right? I mean, that was something. I'm not a religious guy myself, but I mean, there has to be value in that. And to me, it's a similar parallel where, you know, if I don't feel that I'm contributing, I'm going to have idle hands. I'm going to be idly employed, and you get left to your own devices. Next thing you know, it just, you're starting to do things, and you know how the human nature and human character, and if left to its own devices, it will self-destruct. And to me, that's what it is about this tribe, about this sense of belonging. And again, it really goes down to a mutual respect. But anyways,
you know, I want to pose this question to the group and get your opinions on it. And I think, Tosh, you mentioned this a little bit ago. In a society where our population has really grown, and we, you know, most of us live in a very urban environment where we have, you know, a house next to us on each side, one behind us, one in front of us. Do you think that we, even though we are in close proximity, that we are more isolated today than 50 years ago, 100 years ago?
I think we put walls up between us, fences, walls, doors, everything, and we've shut out not only physically, but I think mentally too. Guys?
Yeah, I think proximity and inclusion are two significantly separate things that we end up meshing together. And a function of proximity has nothing to do with a sense of belonging. Hey, I've got a neighbor and I just don't talk to him because I don't have a shared sense of values. They contribute nothing to me except noise at 2 a.m. when I'm trying to sleep. So, you know, there's an absence of respect there. So, you know, proximity and that sense of belonging or inclusion, they're very, very separate in my mind.
Yeah.
So a lot of us are drawn to this trail running community or trail. Oh, go ahead,
Scott. And that's great. So make sure we go there. But
bookmark.
Yeah, but I'm thinking, as you said that about groups and tribes and people living together, I've always looked with a bit of empathy, maybe compassion for homeless tribes,
mm-hmm.
and now maybe not. Maybe they're essentially just breaking away from this big community we call 350 million people, America, and they're trying to get more tribal, and they want to become less connected to this big group, and they want to depend on each other. They want to feel important as they do their thing. So maybe the homeless community has become somewhat tribal. Am I off base, or can you somehow find a link there? I don't know.
I've never been homeless, so I don't have direct knowledge of that, but it's a good hypothesis.
Well, let's call it that. Guys, you want to support that or throw it away?
Have you ever been to Boulder?
Nope.
Yes.
There's a lot of people that choose to be homeless that would otherwise be, you know, fair off to be reasonable, but they choose this simplified life. And to me, on the trail, the longer the adventure, the longer the trail, the more simple everything becomes. I'm on the trail running. I'm on the trail adventuring 4 days, 5 days, 200 miles, 500 miles. I exist solely to survive, solely for being on the trail. Life becomes so much more vibrant. I'm out there, nothing else to worry about except just doing what I'm doing because it's a function of survival or accomplishment, because it's not necessarily survival, but it gets a lot closer to survival in a lot of these situations. And to me, that's what it is. And when we're out there on the trail together, these long, because let's face it, if you and I were on a 3 mile run on a 5K and we came across each other, we probably would not have shared the same type of bond that we did. Would you agree, Don?
Yeah. I don't think it was much risk. There wasn't much risk or danger in a 5K.
Yeah, we weren't removed. We weren't more back to the book about going back to our instinctual senses or these tribal days 10,000 years ago. And you get on a 200-mile trail run and you're that far into it on day three. It's like, what am I doing? Well, I'm just scratching and crawling my way to accomplishment. I'm existing only to exist. It's beautifully simple. It's exhilarating.
Don, we've got a really, really wonderful homeless meal providing place near where I live. And it's one of the most meaningful community service projects we do with our students, to go and help feed the homeless people who go to eat there in the morning and in the evening. And the reason it's so meaningful is precisely your point. They see in these people that are otherwise scary, perhaps on the street corner or in the park or in the dark recesses of town, they see these people laughing and connecting and carrying on and sharing, food with one another when they don't have anything. So while I understand, that it's a bit of a stretch to think of the homeless people as a certain type of tribe, when you see it in real life, it actually is the case. And something about breaking life down into just its necessities can be really profound when you are not in that world and observing it.
Yeah, I mean, every member of that community depends on one another. If it's cold, I've got an extra blanket. If you're hungry, maybe I'll have some extra food. And if you want to sleep, I'll stay awake and I'll watch your back. I mean, that for eons has been what communities and humans' DNA, we've been wired to protect one another, because face it, we have soft skin, no fangs, no claws, relatively weak. We really have to rely on one another to survive against the elements and against predators. So I think what they're connecting to is real human living,
One of the most compelling parts of Younger's book is the section right around the middle where he talks about the veterans who've returned from Iraq and Afghanistan over the last decade, and the country to which they've returned has been, according to a lot of research, lacking in what he refers to as social resilience. And it's precisely what they depended on the battlefield to have for one another. They needed to be completely there for one another socially, and they needed to share values and share materials and share resources. And there's something so egalitarian about that we also see out on the trail that sadly is a little bit less the case in modern society, as we've become actually more socially stratified and more protected against or from those who are different from us. And that's a really, really profound point he makes when looking at the tribe of veterans returning, in many cases with PTSD, whether temporary or permanent, coming into a society that's vastly different than the one they experienced on the battlefield. And in many ways, like those folks who decided to go and live with the Native Americans, maybe makes them long for that, that the comfort of the more socially secure and resilient group that they found on the battlefield. I certainly know it's something that makes me long for the more secure and socially resilient group I live with on the trails.
You know, I love the phrase that you brought up there, Andy, about when you're out on the trails, the social and economic stratification almost does not exist.
Oh, true.
That mm-hmm. you're both there wearing shoes and shorts and a shirt and a headlamp or whatever, and you're trying to suffer through the same experience. You could be doing that with a doctor, with a lawyer, with a garbage man, with a, you know, whatever. I love that part. I've met some crazy mm-hmm. people that in normal life I would never rub shoulders with, but now I have a kinship with them and a tribal relationship with them.
We don't mm-hmm. transport that social position or stature onto the trail. We pull up our shorts, we put on our shoes, and we go off and we all suffer the same, regardless of your social status.
Right.
Yeah, I like that.
That's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We also all share the burden of responsibility, whether it's a burden of responsibility to get from point A to point B or help other people get from point A to point B or take care of the environment in which we're passing through or understand that sometimes the responsible thing to do is just stop and take a break. I mean, I think there's something about the shared responsibility of that kind of extreme exertion that we can't overlook as having an impact on the rest of our lives.
Yeah. So I ask you this, there's a lot of rules and cultural expectations in a tribe. I mean, that's what makes a tribe. If you sat down with a blank piece of paper, you could write down, this is what our tribe stands for. This is what we do. This is our ethos. So how does that get communicated to tribal members in this tribe we call ultra running, trail running? How does that move from person to person? Okay.
Well, I was going to say, I think it is communicated with nonverbal action. It comes from sacrificing for the tribe. And that's one thing that Sebastian brings up in the book, that in order to be a member of a tribe, it requires sacrifice for the tribe, that you need to do things for the tribe's betterment. It's not all about you. It's about the tribe and the existence and further existence of the tribe.
Hmm. Well, but let's face it that we're. I'm
go
sorry.
Ahead, Josh.
I mean, we're not really sacrificing any. I mean, let's put it into the trail running context, though. You know, we're not really sacrificing anything for each other out there. We're not really doing anything like that to. To contribute to existence. I mean, we're out there because we choose to. We're out there because we can afford to. But I think more importantly, we're out there because we're seeking something. We're all out there searching for something. And what is that? I mean, as I can't speak for you, but for me, I want to be pitted against myself. I wanted to be pitted against the environment. I want to experience something. I'm fascinated with sharing sensations on the extremes with other individuals to learn more about who I am and to make a connection with other human beings. That social aspect. I mean, that's why I'm out there doing these things. And I assume the people that I find myself in community with are after in as much of the same things. Like, I mean, let's face it, I'm not towards the front of the pack where I'm trying to win these things. You know, I've gotten out of the triathlons because I don't like the atmosphere there of everybody's got the latest and greatest high-tech gear and they're competing to beat each other and you got to look good doing it. I've drifted into this ultra endurance community for those specific reasons. And that's where I find the resemblance to this tribal thing fascinating to me, because it's yes. That's what I'm looking for. I'm seeking something that I can't find in my everyday life with the people that I'm surrounded with, that I've had in the past due to my career. And now all of a sudden, in the strangest of places, I'm going to find the same companionship that I found on the battlefield with a podcast host, with a liver surgeon, with, you know, a tech mogul, with a person that just lives in the back of their VW bug and travels from race to race. And I'm finding the same commonality and connection with these people. And it's beautiful. And I find beautiful people. I'm not surrounded with this world of comparison. I'm not surrounded in this world of competition. I'm surrounded by a concept of shared success, of collaboration. And it's not, I need to identify myself because I finished faster than you. That's not what's out there in these 100 and 200 milers. It's I attribute my success because a group of us succeeded. And I've crossed the finish line with somebody that probably wouldn't have crossed the finish line had it not been for us creating a relationship. Or I actually crossed the finish line because I made a connection with somebody else and they spirited me forward. So my identity becomes that of the shared identity, the shared success. And I that's, to me, when we talk tribal, we talk about existing and over years and generations. To me, that's this trail running thing. That's this ultra endurance sport, as opposed to 5Ks, 10Ks, triathlons, what have you.
AJW, you had a comment right before. Is it still relevant, or
it's related? Actually, I think that you know, we've spent a lot of time on this podcast and all around the sport at times bemoaning the growth and commercialization of mountain ultra trail running, and you know, maybe the influx of money and potentially drugs and things like that. But I've never seen an organization that polices itself quite, a community that polices itself quite as well, especially one so big and disparate as long distance ultra trail running. And I think a lot of it has to do with, to keep the metaphor going, we have some really well-respected tribal elders, if you will. And whether they're outspoken or soft-spoken, we tend to, and some may accuse them of being old-school curmudgeons. I think there are times when that check on whatever it is that might be moving a society astray is brought back to center. And I think every time, as Tosh mentioned, every time someone comes over from triathlon or road running or Tough Mudders or whatever it is that they're coming from, and they find us and they find our little tribe, it's refreshing. It's egalitarian, and in many ways, it believes in itself and is perpetuated in large part by those who've come before. And while I don't think there's anybody who is going to go around saying, I am the grand poobah of ultra running, I think anytime someone tries to do that, they get smacked back down, you know? So I think that's the beauty and joy of this sport. We'll take them all in. We'll come, bring us your tired, your poor, as long as you can run 200 miles, we'll take you.
And even if you can't, we'll pull you along, right?
We'll pull you along, exactly.
You know, I'm going to say races are tribal gatherings, and we come together as a group. You know, we leave, whether we're a liver surgeon or a garbage man or a guy living in the back of his truck, we come together in like purpose at these tribal gatherings. And one thing I've noticed as we've had a chance to announce some ends of races, our people come in as groups. They, you know, there's a big gap, and all of a sudden seven come in, and there's a big gap, sure, and four come in. And as things get harder, we kind of gather up and we gain strength for one another. And I think that's some of the things we've all identified as we are reading this and thinking through it and enjoying this community, is it's hard to do by yourself sometimes. If you've gone out on a long, hot, hilly run, me recently, and say, dang, I'm tired, I don't think I can go anymore. But there's something magical when you put that bib on and you go to the official tribal gathering and you work as a unit. You're a team out there with everybody. You're a machine that works together. And you don't want to let your fellow runner down. You don't want to let yourself down. That you've got a job to do, and that is to get to the finish line, and your responsibility to do it well and make good decisions. And I think that's what's magical about these tribal gatherings / run.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to quote another quote that I had written down from the book that is a little bit different from where we are right now. But This is a quote from Sebastian Younger on Tribe, from the book Tribe on Homecoming and Belonging. Human beings need three basic things in order to be content. They need to feel competent at what they do. They need to feel authentic in their lives, and they need to feel connected with others. These values are considered intrinsic to human happiness and far outweigh the extrinsic values such as beauty, money, or status.
Good quote. Hey, let's focus on those three words. And I would just, my first thought about competent is that doesn't mean you have to be on the podium.
No, not at all.
It just means you have to successfully travel the distance.
Right.
That's competent. Any thoughts on that, guys?
I'd like to even extend it beyond going the distance, but having championed the endeavor, whether you've crossed the finish line or not, championing the endeavor means going as far as you can willfully, maybe even a touch beyond that. And, you know, I've watched individuals go 180 miles to come up short at the 204 mile mark and still be included in the tribe because they championed the effort and they did it honorably. And, you know, that goes directly to the book as well about how in battle, I can't remember the exact place, but it's not necessarily about the end zone or the finish line, but it's about attempting the task with the greatest veracity that individual can muster. And so I don't know, but yeah, absolutely. That feeling of competent to me is, yeah, I'm willing to go out there and give it my all. Yeah. I'm willing to get out there and put myself on the table for this sense of community with everybody else, because that's what everybody else is doing. So by God, I'm going to do it to my ability. And I'll stop there.
That actually goes back to one of the podcasts we did fairly recently on vulnerability. You're putting yourself out there and risking everything that you have, and you're putting yourself in a vulnerable position because you want to experience the extreme.
And that's what I enjoy about conversations is your point was very well made, Tosh, and you're right. At the end of the endeavor, we can all gather at this tribal community fireplace, if you will, if you can picture that. And whether you finished or not, whether you just put your best effort in, you're a member of the tribe and an important member too, regardless if you made that finish line. So good distinction. I'm glad you brought that up. AJW, you're usually not one to be short on words.
No, I'm not, and this is just such a thought-provoking point that Scotty's made with these three key aspects of what it, you know, what makes us at our core. I do think competence is something that we have to be careful of, quantifying too much. I agree with Tosh that competence is often in the eye of the individual. And once you become competent, whatever it is that you're competent in, you know, it's up to you to do with it what you may. I think that's where the tribe and this feeling of belonging and connectedness can really make us all better. Again, as opposed to the isolation of modern society, a little bit of the pressure, a little bit of the group intensity, you know, maybe if Tosh hadn't come along, Don, you would have stayed asleep on the side of the trail. Or if Tosh had decided to just ignore you and be like, sweet, that's another place I've gone ahead of here, you know. But take other aspects of ultra running. Whenever we're out on the trail and someone goes off trail, I mean, you're yelling and screaming, hey, get over here. You missed a turn, whatever. That's tribal. You know, in some other spots, we might be like, oh, look at that guy going off the trail. I'm going to get out of here in a hurry, and that way I can beat him. You know, I think that there's some real meaning in that. Real meaning.
You know, I love that. It brought to my mind this whole stratification of performance in trail running and within a tribe, if you will. Trail running is the only place that I've been able to find where that person that is on the podium, or those people that are on the podium, would even talk to a guy like me that is finishing mid or most likely back of the pack. And you can have a discussion and a relationship that's mutual, a mutual respect. I think that's something that is very cool. I remember hearing stories of Scott Jurek hanging around the finish line at Western States until the last person finished.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you don't see... I mean, I like to play football, flag football with my friends. I don't see myself hanging out with you know, Manning, right?
AJW, have you ever been invited by Scott to play flag football? Because he plays with his friends. I haven't been invited.
No, I haven't. I'd like to, Scott, sometime.
Hey, and to your point, I believe there's other communities that do that. Maybe surfers and maybe rock climbers and maybe, I mean, there are certainly, we're not exclusive as trail runners, but we're just associating with trail runners.
Point. So very good.
I think there's a lot of good groups out there. Hey, let's talk about the next
quilters.
Word.
Quilters? I'm sure there's a tribe of quilters.
Yeah, but they're not loyal to one another, I don't think. So if you poke yourself in the finger with
they
one
have
of those...
a Band-Aid? You got to have Band-Aid. You help your...
That's it. Yeah, but those summer quilting shows, those are some cutthroat competitions.
I mean, if you're out of red yarn, you're just out of yarn. No.
Yeah, there's only so many quilt consumers out there.
I mean, even if I have two little rolls of red yarn, you're not getting it from me, pal. Hey, let's talk about authentic, because why did he include the word to feel authentic? And I've got to think that the three of you probably have a better clue than me, because I'm kind of short on that right now. Why do you have to feel authentic to be part of a group?
Well, I think it strips you down to the core.
Mm.
You can't fake it at mile 40 in a 50-mile run, right? You can't say... You know, have your last race shirt on and fake it at mile 40. You have to
really want it. You have to want it.
And you have to pull yourself up and you have to grunt it out to the finish line. That's what I think of authentic.
So everybody wants to be there, and they may have their own separate reason, but there's a desire to be there. Desire to be there. You guys, what do you think authentic?
Well, I think it relates a little bit to our conversation about vulnerability a couple months ago, and that is that, you know, when you're your authentic self, you know, your heart's on your sleeve. The those around you, what you see is what you get. And there's something that is returned to the individual when they're having authentic experience, when they're having deeply meaningful something that, you know, as Tosh has said, is just, we're here and we're getting from mile one to mile 200. How much more authentic can you get? You know, it's and I think out of that authenticity comes a sense of purpose and meaning that in the absence of it, you may not. So once you're competent, this is great. You know, you've got this competency, but, you know, in the midst of that competency, now just be your real self. Be what you can be. And whether that's the guy who can finish and win, or whether that's the guy who doesn't make the cutoffs and has to drop out, or is one of the hundreds in between, that's where the authenticity of our ultra trail community really is on full display.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, authenticity is at the root of all of the leadership things that I do. And it's essential, right? Authenticity is the freedom for an individual to feel comfortable with who they are, feel comfortable with being able to outwardly manifest their identity. And that happens inside of circles that accept you for who you are. They don't judge. They don't enforce a certain paradigm upon you or who you're supposed to be. In fact, they probably tend to stiff arm individuals that are less than authentic. So this spirit of authenticity, it's I want to be comfortable being me. I want to create an environment where you're comfortable being you, and I want to celebrate each other for our individuality, and feel comfortable, feel respected, feel safe, feel cared for. To me, this sense of authenticity is absolutely essential. It's the root of everything. Even in the experiences outside of trail running, in everything else in life, what we value. I don't want to waste my time or energy trying to figure out if who you're presenting is the real you. I don't have time for that. And the cost for making a mistake and trying to figure out who you are, I just have no desire to pay. Out on the trail, Mother Nature, she just equalizes everything. She equalizes everything. Fatigue, hunger, pain, blister. It doesn't matter. Eventually, she's going to win, and who you are is going to be who you are. And I want to be the person that puts my arm around you just the way that I hope that you're the individual that puts his arm around me in the time of need or celebration.
And we've said that before when we're describing the nation, the Trail Runner Nation, is a community that Mother Nature or the trail qualifies her members, because we've all gone through the hardship and some of the obstacles, and what's left, what's stripped down, is the real you. You know, all those false pretenses and facades that we bring up, I'm a tough guy, whatever it might be, the trail humbles you and lets you know who you are. And I think that's why conversations become so easy, free-flowing out there, and they're authentic. And you talk about things that ordinarily you wouldn't talk about any other place. You're not afraid to expose your emotions or your feelings, and you let it out there. And it's amazing, if you listen to some of the conversations that naturally happen on the trail, how deep they go. Because,
you know, and I'm gonna throw in the phrase that I learned when I first got into trail running, and that is, what's set on the trail stays on the trail. So you have that trust with the people that you're with to open yourself up to conversations that you normally would not have, and know that it's safe within your tribe.
We talked about the final word, connected. We talked about competent, authentic, and connected. And I would like to pose this question, because the group that I was running with the other day, we talked a little bit about this as before the podcast, and we tried to define the difference between, as we speak about connected, the difference between a community and a tribe. What is the difference between community and tribe? Any thoughts on that?
The only thought that I have that just comes into my mind is, a community doesn't necessarily rely on the individuals for its existence. Mm. A tribe does. Mm-hmm. A tribe needs every individual's effort and contribution to survive.
And they're important. All are valued.
And if they don't contribute, they're kicked out. Maybe that's a little harsh. I don't know.
I also think that not all communities are necessarily united around a common purpose. And I do believe that something that differentiates tribes is that they're united around a common purpose, or a common set of values, or a common something that unites them and pushes them forward in a unified way. Even if they're, you know, are tribal elders and there's a social strata and so forth in there. And not that communities aren't united, they certainly are, it's in the name, right? But something that's tribal, it's in the collective DNA of the members of the tribe to be pushing forward with that purpose.
So
I'd have to Google the definition of community and tribe real quick, you know. But I also want to be careful that, hey, are we trying to romanticize this word tribe, like trying to make it more sexy than it is? I mean, it's powerful, and I believe in it. But let me I just want to take pause real quick, and the difference between community and tribe, and community is this, but tribe is so that, and I just want to think for a few minutes before I just kind of answer this question. And then 4 weeks down the road, I'm listening to myself sounding like an idiot, which I probably will anyways. But doesn't modern day communities try, given their current constraints of where we're at in society, to try as close as possible to emulate those things or aspects about a tribe that they can? I'm fumbling here as I'm trying to think on my feet. Let's not knock this community. I mean, it's a great effort. It's a great effort given what we have today, because of advances, because of where we are to model those things that we want to romanticize about being so great from times ago that we're reading about in a book. So I don't know. Go ahead. I just tried to start something there before we started to throw each other money and everybody get rich on the same dollar.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
I'm glad that you brought that up. I think that possibly community is the overall
umbrella
for the group, and we could have many tribes within that umbrella. That maybe tribes are small components that fit together nicely to build this community.
Maybe community would be endurance sports, and ultra running is the tribe. Maybe is that what you're trying to get at?
You know, I'll take it. I'll go to the Marine Corps, for instance. That there are admin people, there are air wing division, there are artillery people, and there are special forces. I mean, they're a community of Marines, yet they each have special activities and training and responsibilities that make up their tribe. But certainly within the overall community, you have firemen, you have bakers, you have, you know, candlestick makers that are part of this community and tribal. So maybe what we're defining is just we're defining just small groups within communities.
When can we buy the Trail Runner Nation candlesticks in the store?
They're there. You just need to look really hard.
is that what you were thinking?
By the way, they're one lumen.
Only one lumen. That is right. That is how they measure the lumen. Yeah. It is one candlestick power.
Exactly.
Very good, Scott. Are we somehow differentiating tribe and not romanticizing it too much and placing ourselves on top of the highest pedestal of being tribal members here?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. The community could be trail running, and you've got 50 kilometer distance, 50 mile distance, 100 mile distance, and 200 mile distance. You got a certain click of, or how about just even at the Tahoe 200, you could say that there were a couple different tribes. I'm sure what you and I experienced, Don, together with the collection of other people that we shared along the way, was probably replicated a dozen or two dozen different times in different locations along the trail amongst other people. So who's to say that we all weren't just little tiny tribes or inside this collection of this community called the Tahoe 200. I don't know. I'm stretching. I'm reaching. But we do our best. Community is a group of people or individuals with a shared set of values trying to get by, given some loose sets of understandings. I'm not a big rule fan, so let's not even put rules, but I mean it's a community. Why do communities create communities? Why do we go and form these things no matter what they look like? It's because we're looking for something to share. We're looking for this human connection, this individual. I want to share something. I want to, right back here, I want to be respected, I want to be valued, and I want to contribute. I want to be free to be who I am and accepted as such. And so, you know, whether it's a tribe or whether it's a community or whether it's a club, whether it's a unit, whether it's whatever it is, it's just a catchy different name for groups of people trying the best that they can to be together.
And I think we may have, Tosh, described that in the very beginning when we said that people within a tribe or within a close unit want to be appreciated, they want to contribute, and to do that, it's necessary for communities to break into tribes because there isn't room for everybody to feel needed and participate when it's a big community. So naturally, we seek to these smaller units, clubs, whatever you want to call it, or tribes in this case. And I think at the Tahoe 200, that's what you were talking about, we ended up with groups that worked together. And I think that was a great example of necessity meeting what we had to do. There's another word there. Do wasn't it, but
that's where the edit comes in after the post podcast production, right?
You will hear a perfect word coming right out of Webster's dictionary right in that spot.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think about the energies and the emotions, and You know, it always comes to fold that, oh, well, I want to call myself a tribe for that badge that I can put on myself that says I am part of this tribe. And it becomes more about the badge than it does about the those intangible things that were alluded to in the book or that we've talked about here. I want to call myself a tribe because that's the cool, sexy thing to do is to get that moniker of tribe on what we do. And the next thing you know, what's missing? All of the essential things that actually make it a tribe, short of just giving it the title of tribe. And we see that everywhere in society today. So to me, whether you call it a five-letter word starting with T or some other word, doesn't matter. It's the components that actually create it what it is. And that's why I like whether I think those three words are exactly perfect for me or my understanding, you know, competent, authentic, and connected doesn't matter. But what it is, it's those intrinsic elements or those intrinsic energies that is what it is. And then we just have to happen to put a name to it, whether it's community or tribe, and have to declassify, reclassify. And oh, like it's crazy. Science just blows my mind anyways.
Sports teams are tribal. I mean, you have people running around in San Francisco 49ers, Oakland Raiders, New York Jets, what have you.
And the fans are. I mean, I think of the here out on the West Coast, we have the Raiders. Raiders. What are they called?
Raider Nation.
Raider Nation. That's it. Yeah, they're fierce.
Hey, in that book, they brought up this term, community of sufferers, brotherhood of pain. Yes. Which defines some of the experiences from this group, tribe. How important is it to be sufferers, to have some of the events that we do include pain? More suffering, more pain, more commitment? What do you guys think about that?
Well, sensationalistic jargon. Mm-hmm. That's what I think that is, to be straight with you. It's because it sounds sexy. It sounds like a cool thing to say. I disagreed in the book when they brought up that. It's funny that you say that because I have, you know, I reserve words anyways. I'm a weirdo. I like to reserve words. Hero bothers me. I think we use that word too loosely in society. Suffer is another one. Hate is another one. And, you know, I can go on a long, long, long rabbit hole search, you know, the Greeks and three different words for love that we use now, one word, whatever, whatever, whatever. We could talk about that for days. But to me, brotherhood of pain, something, something, suffering, to me that just, I was turned off when I read that and how much time was spent on talking about those things because I think it's sensationalistic. I'll stop talking, let somebody else disagree with me or agree with the book or whatever. But to me, it just was like, yeah, bleh.
H-A-W?
I think that pain, specifically dealing with pain and fighting through pain, is certainly a universal truth of long-distance running. And I think we see a wide array of members of our tribe or community handle it in different ways. And whether that creates a connection between us, I think is a worthwhile debate, but there's no doubt that everybody towing the line at Squaw Valley knows at some point sooner or later, the pain hammer is going to come down and it's how they deal with it. And how they come out the other side, that's going to be how they're measured. And then how they're going to deal with it the next time it happens. And the next time, and the next time. Or if it's going to happen a next time. Let's face it, some members of our community and tribe come to have a couple of bites and go looking somewhere else for some form of entertainment and excitement. So I think that sharing I think the pain of mile 92 of a 100-mile race is pretty unique and is something that needs to be felt to be understood. And I think once it has been felt and once it has been dealt with, it connects us in ways that that nothing else really, at least in the world of long distance running, does.
Tosh, in your defense, you're the only one of the four of us that have seen some battlefield stuff. So I respect your mentioning of suffering and pain, because that's a whole different level. And I definitely respect where you're coming from and your position. But for the soft people with thermostats on the wall and two blankets or three tonight, dear, in that world, the closest we can get is to get out there and run mile 92 and push yourself into a level of pain that you are uncomfortable with. And maybe you need to run a little faster or ignore that blister a little bit more. But it really does, as close as we can get in 2017, dial us into some, in our soft world, some suffering, which by DNA, we are really designed for obstacles, controversies, difficulties, hardships. The human body is amazing and yearns for it. I believe we yearn for that type of experience.
I have a question that just came to me, and I have no idea what my side of the coin is here, but do we wear that suffering as a badge of honor?
Well, I think we tell stories about it.
Well, we tell stories, and that those are the best stories, right?
Yeah.
But do we, I mean, when we're going through that, I mean, we don't sign up for this necessarily to, well, maybe we do.
We're hoping not to suffer.
Yeah, I mean, but you know that you're going to. I mean, yeah. I didn't sign up for this to necessarily go through the pain. I signed up for it, and I do it because I want to see how far I can push myself. Anyway, I'm not sure if that is even a question, but as we were talking, I was thinking, I wonder if maybe to Tosh's point, we over-romanticize this whole idea of suffering and pain.
Are you basically saying we need to get over ourselves?
Yeah, that's a theme we've had on this podcast, isn't it?
It might be.
Yeah.
Hey, Tosh, it's gone full circle. We've taken your thoughts and we've each kind of contributed. Do you think we got closer or further away from what you were thinking?
No, I'm terrible at articulating sometimes what's in my head. And pain and discomfort, you know, shared suffering, right? We've heard all of the little different phrases about shared suffering creates brotherhood and brotherhood seeks shared suffering, pain, something. And there's no doubt that running a ultra marathon, there's going to be some discomfort. Let's leave it there, because my idea of what pain is different than yours, and my idea of what suffering may be different than yours. So on a scale, how do we calibrate our scales? Well, why are we bothering to calibrate your scale and my scale together? And it almost seems like we give undue credit to he who expresses that they suffered more or that they've experienced more pain. So now you get more credit. Like, I take exception to that. Yes, I think we're going to run a 200 miler and it's going to be challenging. It's a trial, it's a tribulation, and we're going to share that together. Why is my 200 mile run and the things that I'm going to experience and have to overcome there, those discomforts or my margins that I'm pushing myself into, the unknown, so to speak, or the where I'm less competent and willing to put myself there, why is my 200 miles different than John's 50 miles if it puts us both in the same place? Meaning, I've done a 50 miler before and I've become competent at it where it doesn't push me into those ugly areas anymore. Whereas John's never done a 50 miler and he's doing it for the first time and he goes into these ugly areas. I've just worked up throughout the years the need to be at the 200 mile distance or the 250, the 500 mile distance to get into those ugly areas to be able to challenge myself. And measuring my distance or my amount of pain or my discomfort versus somebody else's isn't where we should be at. We should be looking at each other saying, wow, you know, you were willing to put yourself out there towards the extremes of your capability, towards the extremes of your comfort, and celebrating those things. I just don't like, oh, well, I, you know, the pain train or, oh, my glory because I suffered the most. And, you know, I think it's an insult to people that have, I have never suffered. I'll look you in the eyes and tell you that I have been through some very, very extreme circumstances and hardships, but I'll tell you, I've never suffered. I look at the, into the eyes of individuals that have never shared, and they have suffered, to suggest that because I was on a 200-mile run and I had a blister and I was hungry and I was really, really tired, that I am actually suffering as compared to what some of the, what true suffering really is. And I just always caution and protect myself from falling into this romantic thing with, oh, I've suffered, or oh, I've pained, or oh, hero this, or oh, that, because I just don't like, I don't like it. I'm a weirdo. I just monopolized the conversation for 3 minutes. No, I'm sorry.
Those are all great points.
A very good point. That we don't need to take advantage of that word.
Mm-hmm. AJW, how many ultras have you run? I know the number, but I forget.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. How many?
About 130, I think. Last count. Yeah, about 130.
So he and many of them. I don't know how many hundreds. Many hundreds. And Tosh, he's about to go put on a bib and run the Tahoe 200 for his first time. And what I would
because Don romanticized it on a previous podcast, and AJW says, I gotta have me some of that romance.
Hey, so AJW, yeah. I would like to know what compels you to, after 130 plus ultra marathons and we can count them, many hundreds, what makes you want to go out there and get part of this 200? And then we have a couple guys that have run it. We might give you a little guidance since we're all part of the tribe.
Or harassment, maybe?
or haze them a little bit.
Maybe.
So, HAW, what compels you to go out and test your mettle against mileage twice what you usually do?
I think part of it is where my sort of running and life has evolved in the last 3-4 years towards kind of away from the suffering and pain and maybe towards challenging myself to take care of myself, if you know mm-hmm. what I mean. One of the great awards that's presented every year at the Tevis Cup horse race is called the Hagin Cup, Haggin Cup. And it's awarded to the horse who completes the 100 miles. And according to all of the measurements of the various veterinary checks along the way, did the least amount of damage to his or herself during that 100 miles. Mm. Similar, if we were to measure the CPK levels of everybody who finished the Tahoe 200, and the winner of the Hagin Cup would be the person with the lowest CPK level. In other words, they suffered and felt a certain amount of pain along the way, but they were able to take care of themselves. They were able to mitigate against the challenges and the hardships that 60 to 80 hours brought them, and they came out the other side. So part of what's motivating me to go longer is after, you know, going 100 miles at a time for, you know, almost 20 years, you know, I wonder how I'll, and now admittedly getting significantly slower as a result of age and, you know, various ailments. I can't help but ask, how would I do doing something longer in terms of, you know, taking care of myself, managing the elements, managing some of the unknown aspects of it, like sleeping and eating. And I think those are fascinating. And there's something a little bit frontier about the whole thing that appeals to me. It's what appealed to me running 100 miles, you know, almost 20 years ago, and you know, going out into that unknown and testing who you are against the elements and the race and the mountains. And I think the 200 mile race is going to be one place where I can push that a little bit.
AJ, I think that was awesome, because I was going to suggest that I don't think AJ is seeking out the 200 to see how much pain he can put himself into. I don't think that's what AJ's looking for. And I've never met you. But that's the sense I get. I think AJ is going to take the 200 because he's been competent at the 100 and he wants to see how honorably he can achieve the 200 miler. Now, how we decide to define honorable is different, and he defined it himself. It's like, yeah, how much class and composure and prudence can I go out and accomplish this challenge of this magnitude that's twice the magnitude of what I've already learned to own? Anybody can set themselves on fire, but who can walk through fire and come out the other side with the least amount of burns? I seek these out. I seek out the longer and longer races because I want to see how comfortable I can be being uncomfortable. I want to, you know, the Germans had a word back in the World War II, crisis proofing. I'm trying to crisis proof myself. I can be okay given any circumstance because of my competence. And that's AJ, man, just so beautiful why you want to go out and crush the 200 miler. I mean, you're so much more accomplished than anything I've ever done. It's amazing. And it's just super cool. I think your words spoke to my point exactly about pain, suffering. It's mildly interesting to measure who we are as people. It's how honorable you can accomplish the task. And that's why you're going to dominate the Tahoe 200.
You know, I just want to reiterate, as AJW was talking about this, I thought, we don't do this because we want to suffer. If we did, we'd go out there without shoes, without any hydration, without any food, and blindfolded.
Good point, Scott.
You know, we're trying to mitigate all that and trying to make journey through and be successful migrating the distance without suffering. It doesn't happen, but the point is we're trying to.
Guys, I've enjoyed this conversation. It's very human to try something hard and accomplish it together. Mm-hmm. And I think that drives us to these tribal gatherings we call races. I think we become teams of 4 to 6 or whatever it might be and make our way through. We watch and care for one another. And I think it's just very human-like to do this stuff. And I'm very, very, very honored to be part of this community and group and hope to for many more years. So thank you guys for showing up and knocking this word tribe around and bringing it to our particular context about trail running and putting ourselves out there.
And if you want a really good book either to read on your coffee table or listen to as you're running, go check this book out. It's by Sebastian, is it Junger or Younger? It's J-U-N-G-E-R. We'll link it to the podcast, of course, those podcast notes. Tribe on Homecoming and Belonging.
Brian Kontosh, Tosh, how do we get a hold of you? How do we follow you? Do you have a presence? I think I know you do. And I need to ask you about that handle. For such a tough guy, how come you have Crooked Butterfly as your handle? There's a story there, brother. Tell me about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely a story. You know, all journeys are imperfect.
All right.
Good podcast. Yeah. I love him.
Oh, I think we lost.
No, we're coming back. We're coming back.
I know. Oh, there he is.
Back. Okay. Okay. Crooked Butterfly. There must be a story.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in life, our paths are never straight. You know, aren't supposed to go a straight, direct line and according to some rule. And butterflies, they don't fly straight lines, and they're exactly beautiful for that imperfection of their path and their journey. And all of our journeys are unique and individual to ourselves. And the butterfly's journey is absolutely amazing. So crookedbutterfly.com. Yes. Excellent. All right. It's delicious.
Hey, we'll, as we're trying to drive people to Scott's show notes, we will link your Instagram and all your presence that you have there. AJW, the Tap Room, as always, writing some thoughtful articles at irunfar.com and other places. Where can we reach our executive producer of Trail Runner Nation?
On all the socials at A. Jones Wilkins. Also, I'm coaching over at Carmichael Training Systems, CTS.com, if you want to get a little ultra running advice. And I'm really looking forward to these next few months or month and a half of training and trying to figure out how to spend 70 or 80 hours in a long, vigorous hike.
Well, I'm gonna be out there watching you, AJW. That's for sure. And if you need something from this community member, you can count on it. So,
hey, Tosh, what do you have coming up? I know that are you joining Don up at Bigfoot here in a couple weeks?
Oh, I was hoping to. I'm getting ready to do the Fire and Ice Ultra up in Iceland. And I'll be doing the Moab 200 for its inaugural race this October. So two big events. Real excited. And then I've actually just got invited to head up to Iceland for the 24-hour Spartan Challenge World Championship. So I think I'm going to tackle that. That first Spartan race, and why not just jump right into the World Championship? So.
and why not? Hey, our next, and you started this, AJW, yep, with this book review, yep, and tying it in, and it's been a lot of fun. We've done 10,000 hours vulnerability, and now we've done Tribe. Next up is Grit, GRIT, and that looks to be a good one. Tosh, we'd like you to come back on that one if you could. This is the best time to commit somebody. If it doesn't interfere with Fire and Ice and your world championship Spartan racing and Moab, etc., we'd love to have you back because you're a thinker and you bring up good points. And you're not afraid to state your opinion. Yeah. And that's what makes a good conversation. And you feel safe doing it. And that's good.
Yeah, I'd love to. Let's just sort the dates out. Grit, it's a big word, big deep word. So I've written about it a few times, and would love to join you.
Do you think we romanticize grit? We'll leave it there. Good. Now go out and run,
Moss.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Hey. Have a wonderful day.